Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 347 of the podcast. It's Thursday, 9th of November, 2017, as I record this early, as I am off to London tomorrow to speak at the Youpreneur Conference, which will be my last speaking engagement of the year. Hooray! And that should be cool because it's more about blogging and podcasting and internet business. I am actually the only session on book marketing, so that's going to be interesting. And it will be mainly, you know, focused on other things. And many of the audience won't be authors as such. They will, many of them, I'm sure, will be writers, but it's going to be a different slant. And the speakers include podcast big names like Pat Flynn and John Lee Dumas, and also, Carrie Green, and, lots of people who are sort of big in the nonfiction and business space, but not so much in the author space. So, it's going to be good. And I'm sure I will share some lessons learned next week. So coming up today, you're going to get a whole lot of me. I've recorded my thoughts separately on what I've been thinking about for the last month, which includes my travels to San Francisco and Oregon and the Coast Workshop. So that is coming up. And the show notes are extensive this week. So remember, you can always find them at thecreativepen.com/podcast. And this is episode 347. And there usually is a transcript of the interview section. So hopefully that's useful. Right. So in publishing this week, the big news going around has been the end of Pronoun, which I certainly was not surprised about. And if you've been listening to the show, I've pretty much said this from the beginning, as they never had a business model. They passed on, it was free to publish with them, which is what we have with all the big vendors, but then they didn't take a percentage of sale. And once Macmillan, big publisher, bought them, it was only a matter of time before they either had to make revenue or they were closed. As once you are a line on someone else's P&L, profit and loss, if you're not doing well, you will be gone. And that is actually how so many authors get ditched from traditional publishers if they're debut books don't perform, or books later down the track. When you're a business and you do reports and things aren't working, that's when you make changes. So I'll be talking lots about business models in the main section of the show, and I'll also list the various services that I trust and think you should be using. And they're also in my free ebook, Successful Self-Publishing, which is available in all the usual stores and in print. So if you did go into Pronoun, then definitely be looking at some of the other places, one of which is Draft to Digital. And they announced this week that they are distributing to Amazon, as well as, you know, places like Nook and Kobo and things. I will be staying with going direct to Amazon, Kobo and iBooks. And I do use Draft to Digital for a whole load of other stores, and also Publish Drive. And I also recommend StreetLib. But basically, this will help international authors who can't go direct to Amazon. And that is a surprising number, to be honest. Also, Nate at The Digital Reader talks about Audible launching a Chinese language site. And I think I mentioned last week that it's always interesting to watch what Amazon is doing globally, because it has some indication on what they think is growing. As in, if you again think about that sort of P&L and what is performing and what isn't, and what you want to grow, because obviously companies start things, see if they work, and then give them X amount of time and then, you know, turn them off like we all do. So this is interesting. It is a curated store, so you're not going to find your English language audiobook in the store, but, you know, hopefully that will come, as many people in China actually do listen in English, including some listening to this show. So hello, if you're in China. Fantastic. Okay, so on personal writing stuff, just a quick one because you're going to get lots more of me talking about this. I'm working on my second big edit of The Healthy Writer, and it will then go back to Dr. Ewan Lawson and then back to me again next week. We've got a big back and forwards week coming in order to get these last edits right before we send to the proofreader. So very excited about getting that through. It's a book that is really important and it's helping me once again. As I'm editing it, I'm like, yeah, if I'm going to say that, I really need to make sure I'm doing that. It's a bit like the Successful Author Mindset book. You know, when I wrote that, I was like, I really should listen to myself. So lots of useful things happening this week, too, in particular. If you want to turn your book into a course, then check out the Teachable Summit at thecreativepen.com/summit17. SUMMIT17. And as I'll talk about in the main section, I think nonfiction will become increasingly important as internet access spreads and people look for help with their own experience and what they want to achieve themselves. And courses can provide more revenue for the same content. I'm certainly going to be doing more courses on the lecture style mini course model, because, you know, not massive courses, but little small ones. And I use Teachable already, and I will continue using Teachable. I use it right now for my How to Write a Novel course and Creative Freedom. So if you want to learn how to set up a profitable online course and all the technical stuff you need to do and all the organization, check out the summit, which is free to listen on the specific days, all online, so you can do it from home. And you can purchase the recordings for a reasonable amount if you prefer. Go to thecreativepen.com/summit17. And also, if you are listening to this immediately, Mark Dawson and I are doing a free webinar on 7 advertising strategies that are working right now to sell more books. And if you're getting the podcast, it is tomorrow, Tuesday, 14th of November, 2017, 3 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. US Eastern, 8 p.m. UK. Mark has opened the Ads for Authors course, but you don't need to buy anything to attend the webinar. And you can get a ton of free tips on doing paid ads for book sales. And I always learn a lot because Mark does so much testing so that we don't have to. So we'll be doing a Q&A. I'll be on the chat. It will be fun to come along. Anyway, so register for your free place at thecreativepen.com/NOV17, short for November, NOV17, and or in the show notes. And if you just want the replay, you can register and get that within 24 hours. So hopefully you will join us. Okay, so thanks for all your emails and tweets and comments this week. Remember to let me know what you're doing while you're listening to the show. Brittany Fichter says, thanks for all the advice and encouragement over the years. I just used my writing profits to pay off the car. Now, that's awesome, Brittany. I'm really just so pleased to hear about that. And I heard Honoré Korda on the Sell More Books show with Brian Cohen talking about the 20 Books to 50K Vegas conference. And she said that one of the things that was very noticeable on that conference, and there were over 400 people there, that it is definitely very possible to make a living writing. And she mentioned that, you know, obviously there were multi 7-figure authors there, but there were also people who were doing things like paying off the car, or, you know, paying some extra money down on some debt, or, you know, taking their family out to dinner once a week. So that's something to keep in mind with today's show. You know, I'm something like 11 years into this journey. So if you're just starting, then, you know, having these smaller goals is awesome. Lon E. Varnador says, listening to your most recent podcast on a train to New Orleans with Jay and Zach, which is very cool. And Guy Windsor, catching up with the podcast while strolling through the park in Sydney, Australia. I came over from teaching swordsmanship classes in New Zealand. And Guy was on the podcast a while ago talking about weapons and swords in for use in your fiction, generally, I suppose. But you can certainly find that episode a while back. Emily Labrum says, I've been binging on the podcast, so many insights applicable to traditional publishing. And yes, I mean, it's very hard because if I did this podcast, well, first of all, I'm not traditionally published, so it's very hard for me to sort of come from that perspective. But I do hope, obviously, that if you're listening and you're traditionally published, that this gives you insights for your career, regardless of how you're publishing. You know, it certainly is meant to be available for people who are writing in general. And just a couple more. L.E. Wilson, listening on a morning walk in Round Rock, Texas, with a picture of a statue of a child reading on a bench, which is lovely. And finally, Briar DeViro, catching up while working out, looks like a walk or a run along the evening beachfront. Lovely picture. Thank you, everyone. So great to hear from you all. And thanks for sharing. And today's show is sponsored by my own audiobooks, which include Business for Authors, How to Be an Author Entrepreneur, which I narrated myself. And it goes through all the fundamentals of business, a theme of today's show. Plus, How to Market a Book, third edition, How to Make a Living with Your Writing, and also The Successful Author Mindset. I'm intending to update Career Change and also my Public Speaking for Authors, Creatives, and Other Introverts book in the next few months, and getting those up too. So if you like to learn while doing other things, check them out on Audible, iTunes, all the usual places, or there is an audio link at the website. This type of sponsorship pays for the hosting and transcription, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon. You know how much I love you all. You're amazing. Thanks to new patrons, Kevin J. Anderson, out walking as he listens to this, I'm sure, Jack Logan and Rose Donovan. Thank you to everyone who's been supporting the show for a number of years now. So thank you, everyone. And I really do appreciate the Patreon support, like your tweets and emails. It demonstrates you enjoy the show and want it to continue. And you can support the show on Patreon with just a couple of dollars a month or a couple of coffees a month if you're feeling generous, and you'll get the extra monthly Q&A audio, which I'll be recording next week. So get your questions in now if you're a Patreon supporter. And if you start supporting, you get all the backlist Q&A. You can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Right, let's get into me talking about everything I've been thinking about recently. Hello everyone, it's just me today, so a little bit different, and I'm going to be talking about the stability of the indie author business model and positioning for the next phase of growth, which is going to be my roundup of what I learned at the Coast Business Workshop in Oregon with Dean Wesley Smith and Christine Catherine Rush in 2017. So the last week of October, I spent on the Oregon coast with, I think it was about 45 other people, maybe 50 other people. And I went to learn, but also this year I spoke and co-presented on some panels. So I'm going to share some of my thoughts and lessons learned. And interestingly, these are not necessarily from any specific sessions, but are more from having an extended time thinking about the state of play and what I see coming in the next few years and what I'm thinking about. Sometimes you need to take a step back to examine the bigger picture. And it was good for me to have some time away to think and sort of get my business plan ready for 2018. Now, this is definitely more of a advanced session, I guess. And I am reading some of this and talking around the notes that I've done. So some of this will kind of sound more like I'm reading, which I am, because I kind of prepared it all first. And it's on the blog as show notes. So if you want to have show notes, there is actually, all of this is in writing on the blog. You can always find the show notes at thecreativepen.com/podcast. And this will have everything there if you want to print it out or anything. Okay, so as I said, this is more of an advanced perspective. Since I started writing seriously for publication in 2006, I first self-published in 2008. So basically, I'm nearly 10 years into having first self-published, and I started The Creative Pen in 2008. I started podcasting in 2009. So my perspective on this may well, is most likely to be different on yours to yours. And it, you know, some of these things are important. So if you don't agree with me, that's completely fine, but it's my podcast. So, okay, let's get into it. Okay, so just to let you know what I will be talking about, in the first section, I'm going to talk about how the indie author business model has stabilized and talk a bit about how you can make the most of stabilization. Then in the second section, I'll be talking about positioning for the next phase of growth and disruption. And I'll be talking about how, you know, some of the things you probably need to be looking at right now, and then also some of the things, you know, more for the future. I will then, in the third section, I'll talk about time triage and productivity. And we'll be talking about that. And then finally, language, worldview differences that were quite interesting, and also a little extra seeing the future in San Francisco and Oregon and some differences between the US and the UK. So language difference, cultural differences, and some of the things that I found interesting on the trip. So those are the main sections that I'm going to cover. So let's start with section A. The indie author business model has stabilized. So I think it was interesting because last year I went to the coast and I wrote a lot more notes last year as I was learning a lot. You know, one of the big things I've done this year is move a lot more into print with Ingram Spark and Curl Up Press, a small press for my print books. I'm doing a lot more print products. And I guess one of the biggest realizations is how little things have changed in the last year. And this resulted in me thinking about a lot of this type of stuff. So the Kindle had its 10-year anniversary last week, which pretty much marks 10 years of indie author opportunity. Of course, there were always authors self-publishing in print, especially professional speakers, business people, poets, and you know, people doing ebooks, which were basically PDF documents that you could download from people's websites, very much in the internet marketing space. So there's all that's been around for a while, but the Kindle really kickstarted the digital revolution, and print on demand really went mainstream soon after. Although I'm still shocked to go along to publishing conferences and find that traditional publishers are only now discovering print on demand. But I'll come back to that sort of understanding later. But right now, in 2017, indie authors have everything we need to run a scalable, digital, global publishing business from a laptop with very low overheads or running costs, at least in Western developed countries. This is huge because there have been a lot of missing pieces. You know, I remember thinking a few years ago, oh, I really wish we had pre-orders, and then we got pre-orders. And, you know, that was a really big thing, actually. I don't know why. I can't even remember why it was a big thing now, but it was like one of the things that traditional publishing authors had and we didn't. And then we got them. And there's a lot of things that we now have. So just to run through a sort of basic list that might help you with your processes. And if you did, you know, I'm not going to go into any of them in detail. I'm just going to list them out. So this is, you know, some of the basic stuff you kind of can have in place right now to run your business. We have software to help us organize our writing, like Scrivener, and co-write and collaborate together, Google Docs and Dropbox, both of which I use with my mum for The Sweet Romance, and currently with Dr. Ewan Lawson for The Healthy Writer, which is coming along nicely. We have a coffee house culture with free Wi-Fi for an office, so you can have, you know, writing space for pretty much a coffee an hour, I think, is the sort of established rate for working in a coffee shop that doesn't need super fast turnover. So that's the key there, finding somewhere you can sit for a while without being moved on. We have online marketplaces and websites that feature vetted professional editors, book cover designers, layout designers, formatters, many of whom have worked with big publishing houses and have many of whom have been laid off from large publishing houses or who work as freelancers. So one of the companies doing this is Readsy, thecreativepen.com/Readsy, R-E-E-D-S-Y, if you want vetted professionals in all those areas. I also have lists at thecreativepen.com/editors. And thecreativepen.com/book cover design. And these are amazing quality professionals that we have now. So it's pretty brilliant that we can use those. We have easy to use, low cost formatting software for layout, including free options like KDP Create, Draft to Digital Templates, the Readsy Book Editor, and, you know, premium services like Book Design Templates and Vellum, which, of course, as many people keep saying, is only for Mac, but it is awesome. We have online publishing platforms that enable us to reach readers in 190 countries with multiple ebook formats. The big ones right now, Amazon KDP, Kobo Writing Life, iTunes Connect for iBooks, Draft to Digital, Publish Drive, Streetly, and Smashwords. We have online publishing platforms that allow us to use print on demand for paperback books in multiple sizes, which includes CreateSpace, KDP Print, and Ingram Spark. And Ingram Spark enables hardbacks as well as special print options and discounting and enabling wider publishing print distribution. So, you know, I actually use all of these now. I use KDP Print for The Sweet Romance and Ingram Spark and CreateSpace and Ingram Spark for my other books. We have online publishing platforms for digital audiobooks, ACX.com, which is only available for authors in some countries, but also Authors Republic and Draft to Digital with Findaway Voices, all of which are available in multiple countries now. I'm getting my countries and currencies mixed up. We have free marketing platforms through blogging, podcasting, and social media that enable us to reach a global audience using our words, images, and our time. We have access to powerful email marketing and paid advertising platforms that enable us to compete with big brands for reader attention, and we have training courses to help us use them effectively. And the price of these things is generally free plus your time, or you can pay to learn more and do things faster and learn from other people. We have online banking, we have PayPal and software to help us manage the business side, including global payments and receipts in multiple currencies without the overheads of multiple currency accounts. And I know that these systems are not available in some countries, but hopefully blockchain and things like that will bring that. But those of us in Western countries, this international payments through the internet really is amazing, because back when I started a business in New Zealand, would have been early 2000s, you had to have those kind of crazy, if you remember them, those kind of crazy swipey things where you have a bit of paper in there and you print the bit of paper and write on it and put it in an envelope and send it off. And you had to have a merchant account with a retail bank. And basically it cost a lot of money and it was very prohibitive to even have a multi-currency account in some way. So, and this is absolutely massive, I think, for the businesses that we can run now. And finally, we have ways to connect with other authors, including organizations like the Alliance of Independent Authors, online Facebook groups and forums for every genre, as well as live events for indies like the Smarter Artist Summit, 20 Books to 50K, which has just started up, which is interesting, and fringe events from the Alliance and others around the various publishing book fairs and meetups and all kinds of other things. So you can find like-minded indie authors around the world, both online and to meet up physically. So, I mean, when you look at it as a holistic business model right now, it's so interesting because we really do have everything we need. And then what is changing? And people say, oh, everything changes all the time. What is changing is new opportunities for streamlining and improvement every week. So, for example, BookFunnel BookFunnel enables us to deliver books to people who sign up with our email list. BookFunnel has now got integration for direct sales through Sells, which I use, WooCommerce, and direct PayPal payments, which is new. And of course, the whatever latest book marketing tactics. So Amazon ads became sort of quite trendy this year, Facebook ads last year, and most authors now use a combination of all these different things. But at an essential level, even though all these new things are coming along, we have a business model that works for independent authors, and the overheads or running costs are tiny compared to brick and mortar stores or large publishers, which makes us nimble, which makes us able to, you know, do this in a very effective manner. And as someone who ran a business, a scuba diving business back in the day, where my overheads were fuel, running costs, you know, insurance for the boat, people who actually worked on the boat who you had to pay, you know, certainly even if the weather crapped out, food and, you know, all the different things that go with running a physical business. This is an incredible business. And those of you who've listened to Business for Authors, How to Be an Author Entrepreneur, I talk about this there as well. So if you're listening and you're like, okay, I'm not quite so sorted, then that's fine, because it may take you a while to put your processes together into a coherent strategy and structure and process, as in I do this step, then this step, then this step. But the roadmap is there and it's clear, and the author business is at heart the same as any other business. We have products and services, employees or freelancers, even if it's just us, the writer. We have suppliers and contractors, people we pay, customers, people who pay us, production models, distribution, sales, marketing, and finance. And this is really interesting. And, you know, one of the things that I kind of got a little frustrated with, you know, or I am getting a little frustrated with in the indie author scene, is that many authors seem to think that a business model is a production model. So, or a production model is a business model. So as in, if you just produce lots of books and the money comes in from one vendor, you're fine forever. That to me is not how you set up and run a sustainable business for the long term in a structural sense, but also in a personal sense. You know, part of a long-term business which can live on after you die is actually about sustaining your personnel, which is you as the writer. And I'm thinking about this a lot, firstly because I'm working on The Healthy Writer with Dr. Ewan, and, you know, thinking about personal sustainability. And also, you know, for me, as I said, I've been doing this now since writing since 2006 and doing online stuff and online business since 2008. So, you know, I need sustainability, because over time you tend to get not bored, but you're like, okay, I know how to do this. What else do I need to learn? And the writing life is fantastic because you can always learn new things, which I love. But the process, once you get that in place, it's awesome, because then you can look at what else you can learn. So the other point is that given the business model is now stable, and it is, you know, and the digital sales base is stable. So online shopping is mature in the US, UK, Australia, and Canada in particular. It's not so surprising that authors in these established markets have been reporting stabilizing or shrinking incomes. And this has been bubbling up around various places. And it's not just people in Kindle Unlimited. So the number of authors and the volume of available books continues to grow, and everyone is a publisher now. You know, when I was in America, I picked up a load of magazines, and in Fast Company, oh no, it was Ink Magazine or whatever it was, but I saw Ink Originals, INC, is now doing publishing books, and you can apply to them and publish through their imprint. And, you know, this is happening everywhere. So, you know, anecdotal evidence also that the income slump is happening to even the big name traditionally published authors. You know, even someone like Dan Brown's launches now are a lot smaller than they used to be. And many of these traditionally published authors are going hybrid. We are seeing more and more traditionally published authors come into indie, you know, keeping some of their books with traditional and then others with indie. And this is only going to become more common as incomes drop. Now, I think that is an entirely normal thing. And those of you who listen to the show regularly will know that I'm very excited about what's coming next. So I don't see that as a negative thing. I see that as a stabilization thing and an, you know, not unexpected thing. And again, you have to address that in the high production model sense, because if your answer to shrinking income is just write more books, then you are going to burn out. So let's talk. How do you make the most of this stabilization? So number one, get your processes sorted out and your freelance team and virtual assistants in place. So really, at this point, if you've written and published a number of books, publishing should be the smallest part of your process. And once you've done it a few times, it becomes pretty automatic. The publishing part really is not a big deal. And when I say publishing, I actually mean, you know, the uploading, you know, the formatting, the uploading, that kind of go live process. The time you spend is more about writing, editing and marketing. But you can also structure that time so you spend less time doing things you don't enjoy. And you can build a scalable business, which as in scalable is pretty much, it's not all dependent on the hours you work. You create it once, sells multiple times. You know, the book is the ultimate scalable product. But also you can have scalable income. You can earn a lot more than you thought you could by, you know, using outsourcing or other people to do tasks so that you're freed up to do other things. So I will be talking more about this over time. It's so important. So I'll be coming back to that. So yeah, get your processes sorted out and your freelance team and virtual assistants in place is number one. Number two, make the most of your current intellectual property assets. So do you only have books in Kindle Unlimited? Do you only have print books on CreateSpace? Have you adjusted your global prices to make the most of sales around the world? If you have ebooks that are selling well, especially if they are nonfiction and you have a platform, because nonfiction is a lot cheaper to produce and the readers are not price sensitive, have you considered doing audio? So you have to make decisions for your own author business, but I'm going through all my own IP assets, i.e. my books, and making sure I've optimized each in terms of the formats, countries, and distribution platforms so I can position for the next phase of growth. As digital and mobile expand in the global market, print is gaining ground in the current market. So this is really interesting. You know, there are the customers who are used to shopping in bookstores by print, obviously, customers who don't have bookstores, you know, what we're seeing in the growth in other countries like Nigeria, for example, is growth on mobile because that's where people buy stuff. So, but it was interesting because, of course, most of us are in the established markets. And Dean Wesley Smith at the workshop talked about a potential scenario where Barnes & Noble bookstores go under in the next 2 to 3 years. And all those customers are suddenly underserved and are looking for print books. Now, of course, Amazon is expanding into physical bookstores and independent bookstores in some places are doing very well. And also some other brands are expanding. But there will definitely be areas where customers are no longer served with their print bookstore. So they will be looking online for print books. So are you ready for those customers? Now, Dean obviously said as well, I mean, they have a number of physical stores. So they have people who load up all their physical products onto things like eBay and eBooks and other ones like that. But for us, most of us looking at just digital, then it is print on demand. So CreateSpace and Ingram Spark, KDP Print as well, if that's the way you're going to go. So are you ready for more customers looking at print? Now, you can use Vellum and a number of those other formatting services to format your own books for print now, which is really interesting. So it doesn't need to be so expensive as it used to be. I'm also looking at two areas I haven't invested enough time in so far: licensing for translation rights and also TV and film. So TV and film is a huge growth market for adaptations, especially as more channels are opening up all the time. So Disney and Apple are the latest to announce more exclusive content, in addition to Netflix, Amazon, YouTube Red and Hallmark expanding their video production side. Fast Company in November 2017 stated that, quote, "Netflix wants to become Disney before Disney becomes Netflix," end quote, which I think was interesting because the basic principle is don't be dependent on licensing other people's intellectual property, create your own. So, and that is what we do as authors. So I've just split out this IP licensing in my profit and loss statement, which is, you know, if you are not measuring your accounts and you want to run an author business, you need to start doing this on some level. It is a very tiny amount right now, but what gets measured gets managed. So, and this is, again, another important principle. If you're not measuring how much that money is and you're not tracking it, you know, you're not focusing on it at all. So now I'll see it I check my accounts at least every week. So, you know, certainly I'll be looking at that and going, okay, I need, you know, that figure will be so tiny, it will embarrass me and I'll just need to get on with it. Number three, continue to grow your backlist. So keep writing. That doesn't change and won't change, even with the disruptions on the horizon, as I will talk about next. Right, so the next section is position for the next phase of growth and disruption. So, of course, regular readers and listeners will know of my positive futurist slant. But right now, it does feel like the lull before the next big shift. And I don't mean in publishing. I mean societal shifts that will change the way we live and work in fundamental ways. Some things like blockchain and digital currencies, artificial intelligence, self-driving cars, 5 billion more people on 4G internet, just to name a few, as well as backlash against these technologies and changes, which have resulted and will continue to result in the swing of the political pendulum in many countries. And this may well be a sort of 5 to 10, maybe more year change, but that is coming up fast. And I'm 42 and I, you know, let's face it, even if it's a 20-year change, I fully expect to be part of that. And, you know, I want to build a business for myself and also from, you know, looking after my family and hopefully to give more money away over time. So this is very interesting. And sometimes it does feel scary, but I think the healthiest attitude is probably that disruptions bring new opportunities if you are ready for them. So again, going back to the list that I started with in the previous category, none of the tools that I mentioned were around 10 years ago. I could not have run this business 10 years ago. And even 5 years ago or 3 years ago, it would have been a lot harder. And this stabilization I've you know, felt really in the last year. It's been like, okay, we actually have everything we need. And that has been a while in coming. And part of that is because the self-publishing movement has grown so much that companies have seen ways to offer services and still make revenue, or authors themselves have come up with things to help. You know, BookFunnel, again, is a great example. I met Damon at Smarter Artist Summit. And, you know, at the time he hadn't, or he just launched BookFunnel. Yeah, I remember. Because he's like, hi, I'm Damon. And then he goes, I'm BookFunnel. And people are like, oh, you're BookFunnel. So this is the thing, you know, authors have developed stuff too. So if you think, you know, what will change in the next 10 years, we will have the enablers also to do that. So of course, certain types of jobs have been lost with the rise of the internet, but lots of different jobs have been created, or lots of different opportunities. And the same will happen with the next big shifts. Now, on next week's show, I'll be discussing publishing in 2027 with Emmanuel Nataf, who is, you know, 10 years younger than me, a millennial, and we're talking in detail. But here are a few exciting things I'm looking forward to. So first of all, blockchain technology enabling trusted global contracts and payments without intermediaries. So this type of transaction is already starting to disrupt banking and may remove the need for high banking fees, as we do business directly with customers globally or through applications, distributed applications that will, you know, be a lot lower cost, I guess, with added security and contractual obligations encrypted on the blockchain that automatically happen based on various actions. So, you know, I might do a joint venture deal with, well, in fact, even looking at doing what I do now with co-writing. So me and Jay Thorne, for example, we wrote Risen Gods in 2015. And every month or two, you know, I have to do the accounts and send him some money. Now, if we had a smart contract on the blockchain, every time an ebook sold, he would get a small, you know, we would both get 50% of a micropayment. And that's kind of the way I would see that happening. And it would automatically happen. And it would just get rid of so much overhead. More on this at the Alliance of Independent Authors Blockchain for Books initiative, and they have a white paper coming soon. So go to allianceindependentauthors.org/blockchain-for-books or just go to the show notes. Also, AI and machine learning. So as I have discussed before with Thad McElroy on the future of publishing on this show, I am really looking forward to the book itself as metadata. I still find it crazy to think that I have to find keywords to target my marketing, and I can't find appropriate categories even now, like Map of Shadows, it doesn't fit. I think the algorithm itself should understand who would like my book, the emotional resonance of it, and how useful it is to certain people. Also, as machine learning and AI get better, we won't have so much problem with like stuffing, like keyword stuffing or content stuffing that scammers are doing, because the machine will be able to look at the content of the book and work out whether or not it is a pile of crap or whether it is something useful, and they'll be able to find where it should go in the ecosystem. And this will become more and more important as more and more people are putting content online, and this sort of big data is so important. Machine learning is continuing to get better. Recently, Alphabet DeepMind, and Alphabet is the now parent company of Google, created a self-learning AI, which you can read all about that, but it's so fascinating. And I fully expect that discoverability will shift completely for books as well as other forms of content. I do not expect us to be typing in categories and keywords. It just seems ridiculous to me even now, but it will disappear. Absolutely. I'm also looking forward to having a centaur-like approach to using an AI assistant, as per the Centaur Chess Masters, which combine human with AI to beat humans or AIs competing separately. So if you're interested in that, Google Centaur Chess and have a look at how that is. And I'll link to some stuff in the show notes as well about how combined human and computer intelligence will redefine jobs. 5 billion new people on the internet. If you've read Peter Diamandis's book Bold or follow any of what he's doing with Singularity University, you'll see the huge growth potential for the coming years is no longer in the developed markets. So I was trying to explain this in Oregon to a couple of people. So growth is very different to an existing market. So absolutely, the existing size of the pond, let's put it that way. So envision in your mind a sort of really big pond, and that is the existing market. It's big markets that most of us get money from: US, UK, Australia, Canada. So that's like the big pond. But if you look over to the right, there's a tiny little pond, but that pond is doubling in size, and that pond is growing bigger, and it's growing bigger each year. And that pond is growth in new markets. Now, many of those haven't even started yet or are only in the very early stages. And you can see that of digital, I mean. So you can see that with Amazon's investment in India, and India may well be the first entirely digital currency. They are moving in that direction. It is fascinating what they're doing. Amazon's investment in the Middle East are early signs of this. So, and again, you know, lots of countries in sub-Saharan Africa, Asia, Latin America haven't even really started digital yet, but the tech giants are invested in bringing streaming internet to the world, including Facebook with Free Basics or internet.org, Alphabet with Google Loon, and much more. And these new shifts, including digital currency and mobile micropayments, will bring new consumers to the market and more readers for our books. So I want you to kind of keep that image in your mind. So the big pond, and you're fishing in the big pond at the moment, but lots and lots of people are fishing in the big pond, and it's getting crowded in some areas of the pond. There are still, you know, there's still growth in different parts of the pond, but if you look at the tiny but growing growth in that little pond, which is all the other countries, that may well eclipse the US. I fully expect, obviously, I mean, the US is right now a developed digital market, but with the growth that's happening in all of the rest of the world, you know, we could see a lot more of our revenue coming from those other markets. That's what I fully see in the next 5 to 10 years. So the growth will be mobile and digital. Most of the new internet users will access through mobile technologies. And I showed when I did my presentation that in it was November 2016, global internet access on mobile devices overtook desktop laptop access on a global scale. So already more people around the world access the internet on mobile devices than desktops or laptops. And these leapfrog nations, as they're known, are moving straight to wireless, mobile, drones, new technologies, because they never had to use desktops or wires or laptops and all of that type of thing. So this is an interesting thing. I think I'm coming back to this later, but Chris Rush mentioned the reason why so many science fiction authors have pretty crappy websites is because they did them first. So back in the day, before even WordPress, a lot of science fiction authors created their own websites on whatever was the tool at the time, something really clunky. And many of them still have a website based on that system, when really they should probably strip them back and rebuild on the new technology. So what you're seeing with these leapfrog nations is people coming online at a point in history when they don't have to do the clunky stuff we did because we started earlier. And that leapfrogging happens as new technology replaces old. Think about Kodak, which, you know, went out of business when Instagram and the, you know, mobile phones went to digital photography, and a whole load of new stuff came up. So very interesting how the leapfrog nation growth will happen. The other interesting thing is demographic changes. So Chris Rush also mentioned seeing the current horror boom coming years ago because of the popularity of R.L. Stine's horror books for kids, which she mentioned would explain Stranger Things and the reboot of Stephen King's It, as well as more supernatural horror movies. And people's preferences are shaped young. And perhaps my own love of action thrillers is shaped by the early consumption of Wilbur Smith, The Hardy Boys, and James Bond on a Sunday afternoon. So it's good to think about what else might be coming based on millennials rising up through the ranks and boomers getting older and no longer being the power force. By 2025, millennials will comprise 3/4 of the global workforce. Now, I'm Generation X. We have no power as there are so few of us. It's very interesting if you look at the demographic curves, the boomers are a big generation, as they're called, the boomers, and the millennials, or they're also called the echo boomers, so are also a very big number. Whereas Gen X, my lot, are very small. So I welcome our future millennial overlords, as they are much more open-minded about gender, sexuality, race, and technology. So we should also see more portrayals of underrepresented groups in the future, as well as some awesome tech. And you can look at catalyst.org for some of these demographic shifts. Some of the other interesting ones, I thought, millennials are now the largest living generation in the US. Japan and Europe are super aging populations and the workforce is shrinking, which may mean that they and we in Europe have the fastest uptake of, say, robots and robot care workers and, you know, people who do that. So it's interesting how these different demographics can shape the technology and the economy that's coming. Also, millennials are increasingly likely to be foreign born with a first language other than English. Now, this is obviously an American website, because foreign born, what they mean is not American. So that's interesting. For example, India has an incredibly young population. Sub-Saharan Africa also has a very young population. So that would explain it. Okay, so how can you position yourself for the next phase and do things right now or in the next 6 months to a year to ensure that you're positioned well for these changes and that it won't freak you out when they come? So first of all, make sure your books are available globally with local pricing applied. So if you're traditionally published, where are your books not available? Or, you know, if you have signed a World English contract, you know, where have they not published you, and can you get the rights back for those countries? If you are an indie, have you changed your local currency pricing? For example, go to amazon.in. Which is Amazon India, and it's in English, so don't worry, you can check it out. So amazon.in, and look at the bestseller list in your category. You will likely find that the bestsellers are between 9 rupees and 49 rupees. And then go and find your books, which, if you're an indie and you just clicked the Publish Everywhere button, you will be there. Find your books and you're likely to be at over 300 rupees. probably around 399 rupees because you haven't changed your local prices. So first thing to do, go in to Amazon and Kobo and iBooks and change all your India. Sorry, I don't think iBooks is in India. Can't remember, but go into everywhere and change your rupee price to 49 rupees, which is currently the lowest price we can go. I would love Amazon, Kobo, everyone, if you're listening, please allow a 9 rupee price. The reason why is because, you want to be found. And remember, this is not about the tiny percentage of cents or pence that this would result in a sale. This is discovery in what is potentially one of the largest book markets in the world. So I'm very excited about India. You know I am. I've talked about this before. But discovery in those markets, you can't be at 300 rupees. You need to be less. Okay, secondly, build your own platform for direct access to your audience. It's so funny because there was a bit, back in the day when, a few years ago now, when really, I guess about 3 years ago, building your own platform went a bit out of fashion and it became the fashion to kind of say, right, well, you don't need a platform because you can just sell on Amazon, Kobo, iBooks, all the usual places, and they are a platform. But it's very similar to saying, well, if you just use Facebook and then they change their rules and now you can't reach people with organic, or they change the rules all the time. So and these other sites can change the rules too. So what if they go bust? So Pronoun disappearing, a whole load of authors suddenly lost their income, because if you only published through Pronoun, then everything is going. So you have to restart. And I think that more authors are going to be selling direct as technology changes, as I've mentioned, enable easier peer-to-peer transactions. Plus, it will protect against the inevitable changes coming through the regulation of big data companies that we are already beginning to see. So the whole Russia Facebook ad issue in the US, also the same in the UK. People are very much talking about how to do tax in the European Union for these big American companies. This could really change the way that things are done. And also, just with the technical changes, a lot of people in developing countries can't shop on big US behemoth companies like Amazon because they're not considered, their payment mechanisms aren't considered appropriate, sub-Saharan Africa being an obvious point. A growing middle class, wanting to learn and no access to stuff like this. So I think that building a trusted personal brand with a website where people can buy directly from you will hedge against the platforms being disrupted. So this is a big thing, but platform, this is kind of circling back to the build your own author platform thing that has been talked about and is talked about. And if you own How to Market a Book, it's one of my fundamentals. But, some people have built what they call a business by, say, writing fast, putting the books on Amazon and using Amazon ads. So being entirely wedded to one platform. And I just see this as not sustainable in the long term. Now, if your business plan is make cash, take out the cash and do other things with it, as in invest in other things, then no worries. But if you are doing this for more than just cash flow, then you really have to think longer term. So I've obviously been building a nonfiction platform for years, since 2008. And that's why you're here, because this is part of my platform. But I'm also considering building a new hub for my fiction platform, because at the moment I have jfpen.com and I blog occasionally there, and I have all my books there. But I don't have a sort of destination site that might attract new readers. You almost kind of need to be a reader to go there. So I have some ideas around what I want to do with a new site, but that's going to have to wait until later in 2018. because my business plan has a ton of other stuff before then, but that may come. And I would advise you to think about building your own platform or consolidating your platform or thinking about what it means to do direct sales. And again, it's now easy because BookFunnel does the distribution and you can use a number of options for sales. Three. Keep up to date with changes. So I mentioned it earlier, but Chris talked about the sci-fi authors and the worst websites because those authors built them so long ago. And it's interesting because there were some issues this week with one of the banks in England. And many of the banks in England have been around a long time, and they all, I used to implement IT systems for the millennium. So I was part of the millennium bug boom in consulting, made lots of money in the 90s from implementing systems that, because companies that implemented systems like in the 80s had to replace stuff for the millennium, or, you know, it's questionable whether they did, but they did. So many of those companies upgraded their systems pre-millennium. And now, of course, we're like, 2017, 2018, that's a lot. Technology has moved a lot. And some of the big companies are struggling because their tech is so old and it would cost so much to upgrade. So if you are a startup right now, so even think about an airline, many of these older airlines have older stock. And if you start up now and you can, jump into the new technology with the latest tools, you can overtake the older companies. So it's interesting because there's been Amazon has been buying up domain names for Amazon Bitcoin, Amazon Ethereum, this type of thing. So obviously they're looking at doing a platform on top of those cryptocurrencies. But the startups, again, the Instagram Kodak example, new companies can leapfrog old companies by their tech. And this is something, again, I'm thinking about on the Creative Pen. Now WordPress is awesome. So the Creative Pen is built on WordPress. But even podcasting, I'm still using the same setup. If you start a podcast now, there is an established process. You can, there's ways to launch things now that were not available when I started in 2009. So, and I'm very aware of this as I'm often early into markets and make mistakes, and then I miss out when it goes mainstream. So, for example, I got into translations early, I lost money, and I have then backed away. But now I need to get back into the game because it's becoming more viable, at least for non-fiction, which needs less marketing. I want to license my fiction, but I may well do translations for non-fiction. I also got into audiobooks early before ACX opened up to the UK, and I'm still locked into a contract. Whereas if I had waited 6 months, I could have done it myself. but equally, the reason I have the business I do now is because I started blogging about self-publishing in 2008 before it was mainstream, and podcasting in 2009 before the audio boom. So I've benefited from being early too. And there's obviously a balance between being the early adopter and jumping too soon or too late. So I think the main thing is be curious and open to learning about the next wave of change so you can be ready to jump aboard. Or keep listening to the podcast, since I share what I learn every Monday. And those are some of the longer term things I'm thinking about. But change it. Well, no, you can change your prices right now. So that's one thing. Go and change your global prices. That's very important. You should be making sure your website is mobile optimized. So especially if your website is old, you need to look at rebuilding it and making sure it's mobile optimized. If you've built on WordPress, it's not hard at all. You just get a mobile optimized theme. I use StudioPress, and you can go to thecreativepen.com/author website for my tutorial. And you should also be looking at implementing HTTPS, which is, securing your site, as Google blog, they have said that any site that does sales definitely has to have that now. And with the progressive move to having all sites HTTPS. So that's really important. Also, make sure your books can be bought on mobile devices and that they are available in multiple ebook formats globally and through print on demand. So I think these are some of the basics to make sure you have in place for 2018. And of course, keep writing. I may have said that already. So the next section is on time, triage and productivity. And there was a lot of discussion about the lack of time to do everything possible as an indie author, especially in comparison to the slow-moving world of traditional publishing, where authors spend a lot of time waiting and only write one book a year. And this will not stop. This speed will not stop. And in fact, change will speed up and opportunity will proliferate. There's always more to do and never enough time. So how do you triage your possible to-do list? And if you're not sure about the word triage, it's what happens when there's like generally in a medical situation, like, you know, in the ER, you kind of say, well, that person is really the most serious, that person is fine, they can get a plaster later, that type of thing. So it's kind of going through and determining what is the most important and urgent things compared to everything else. And the theme of time was really, it was the theme of the Coast Conference, and definitely it's something that many authors struggle with. And of course, I realize that I am full time at this, and you may not be. Maybe you want to be, maybe you don't. And in fact, I think over time I've put a lot of people off doing this full time. But I hope I've also encouraged a lot of you as well, because this is, you know, I think this is the best job in the world, but it might not suit everyone. And also, you know, I was talking to my sister who has a 18-month-year-old the other day, and she was kind of saying how difficult it is to get work that will suit the childcare. And, you know, we were talking about how the years pass so quickly, and, you know, maybe she shouldn't be so worried about it right now and look at in a couple of years' time. So if you feel like, you know, there are things that you need to make the most of right now, like young children, a lot of this isn't as important, or being with your partner, you know, Jonathan and I, one of our big things is spending more time together doing things that, you know, are fun. So, I mean, that's a different thing. And many people will have, well, everyone has different priorities, but how do you get what you want to achieve done as an author, as well as the rest of your life? So how do you triage your possible to-do list? So here is my method, in the hope that it will help you. So one, identify your values as it relates to your work. So I've said this before on the show, but freedom is my number one value. And that shapes why I want to be location independent, why I don't hold physical stock. So again, it's always funny for me to be with Dean and Chris, who have these big, pretty big physical stores. They also live in Oregon, where, you know, and where they live, they have more space. So if you have more space, you tend to have more physical stuff. Whereas if you live in a small apartment, as I do, and you value online and you value digital and you read digitally, you don't necessarily value physical stuff as much. You know, freedom is why everything to me has to be scalable, because I don't want employees. I don't want a physical location. I don't want, you know, to have an office I have to be in a specific time. You know, when I had that diving company, we had a boat, and being tied to a physical location is something I really have a problem with, which is probably why we still don't own a house. I did used to own property and it just didn't make me happy, although we're thinking about it again. So it is interesting, but freedom in terms of my business is so important. So other people, like I mentioned, you know, for my sister right now, it's the kids and family and optimizing everything to spend more time with your kids. But again, that might be yours as an author too. Maybe you're driven to write more because you want to pay for a holiday that you can take with your kids, or move somewhere and buy a different house, or get them into a certain school. So the most important thing, like right at the top of the pyramid of values and to-do lists, like stop looking at all the tiny stuff, lift your head and think, what is the point? What is your defining value? And that leads into, again, one of my little hobby horses, identify your definition of success, both for this book and for your author career. For example, if you really, really, really want to win a literary prize and receive critical acclaim, then ditch the indie author route right now and go traditional, because most people who win literary prizes are traditionally published. But if you want to make a 5 or 6 or 7 figure income with your writing, then indie is fantastic and you will embrace the business model that I and many others do, and get on with your writing. Now, there are, of course, many gradations between these two extremes, but if you don't know what you ultimately want, you will never get there. So that is the second point, identifying your definition of success. Then, number three, write everything down and get it out of your head. So again, I came out of the week in Oregon with a lot of pages of notes in my journals, and I have a lot of journals. I've been journaling since I was 15, pretty much, and went hardcore on journaling from around 2004, 2005, when I was like, I have to change my life. I hit 30 and I was like, I have to change my life. I'm so miserable. And so in the last 12 years, I have generated a lot of journals full of notes, and those have turned into blog posts, books, you know, audio stuff and to-dos. But I basically get everything out of my head onto the page, and then I turn what is on the page in the journal into some kind of action or production. So I don't leave them in the journal unless it's just thinking, writing, or just no, I mean, most of the stuff that's in my journals, I then turn into other things. So my notes from the coast have become this blog post, article, and audio. And also a whole, you know, a number of to-do tasks in my Things app, and also in Asana for my virtual assistants. We have, you know, it's morphing into my business plan for 2018, which I discussed with Jonathan. And so I turn my consumption into creation. So, for example, I made lots of notes and took lots of pictures when I was in San Francisco, and that will be turned into a Arcane novel next year. And it was so funny, yesterday Jay Thorne and Zach Bohannon, who I co-wrote along with Lindsay Barocca, we co-wrote American Demon Hunter Sacrifice on the train from Chicago to New Orleans, and then in New Orleans earlier this year, they sent me a picture. They're on the train again. They're doing more of these trips, and they sent me a picture with Patrick, the conductor, lovely African-American young man who we just loved. We all loved him. So we put him in our book. He actually features in Sacrifice. He's very heroic, but he might meet a sticky end. And it was so funny because they saw him again, and they're giving him a book. So that was cool. But it was interesting because we're turning even the people we meet into books and stories. So, or nonfiction as such. And I probably will be doing a book on productivity because just so many people ask me. Next thing is process the list of the things you need to do against your values and your definition of success. So, for example, Dean and Chris talked about doing mass market paperback versions of the WMG publishing books. And I was just like, why would you do that? And it turns out that we read very differently. And I blogged about that in the last week. And it's interesting because, of course, you know, we have fundamentally different values around physical objects. But readers, you know, last year I was like, yeah, I'm missing out on doing print because, you know, I don't necessarily read fiction in print, for example. But audiobooks has been interesting. You know, I could do everything in audio, but actually I'm making more money back more quickly on nonfiction. So I'm going to focus on nonfiction audio in 2018. So it's really interesting how I could have come out with a list of 300 things to do from the week away, or more than that. You know, could have come out with just loads. And many of you will have been to other conferences where you've come out with lists of loads, but you have to then go, okay, so what are my principles? So, for example, the mass market paperback versions, I could decide to do print on demand versions of those, but I'm not that interested, and it doesn't, you know, I'd rather spend my time doing other things. So no, I won't be doing that. Chris and Dean are doing that. You know, I might be doing nonfiction audio because I've proven that that makes me a profit. You might not have any nonfiction, or you might not decide to do audio this year because you haven't yet got everything in print on demand or ebook version, for example. So you need to process the list of things to do against your values. Another thing Dean said is putting your print books on eBay. So actually signing books and selling them like secondhand on eBay. And I will never do that because I don't want to you know, I don't want to have physical stock. I generally don't sign things. I use Goodreads and have non and give away non-signed copies. But Goodreads is another example. My VA, Kate, sets that up, runs that. I just send the books once, you know, when they come through. So there's lots of things that you could do, but you need to look at your definition of success and process them against your values. So, you know, if you want to win a literary prize, don't bother looking at self-publishing in audio. Some of the things are easy. The next thing to do is to apply the 80-20 rule, otherwise known as the Pareto principle, which states that 80% of the effects result from 20% of the causes, or 20% of your work results in 80% of the profit. So lots of indie authors run around obsessed with minutiae, the things that will quickly fade. But what about the big ticket items that will last? What will make the most impact? What will make the most money? What will bring you closer to your definition of success and fulfilling your values? So this 80-20 rule is really interesting, and there is a balance, of course, because, as I said, IP licensing right now is mostly missing from my P&L. Now, that could mean, if I use the 80-20 rule, that I ignore it completely, but there I know I have to build something for the long term, so I will slowly do that. But right now, before Christmas, getting books available in print is really important, because December is a huge market for print books as gifts and people spending a bit more money on themselves, as well as for me and you and getting out The Healthy Writer before January's self-help season boom. So right now, everything else is going on the shelf. Like, I really would like to build a fiction platform. I have some ideas and I'm excited, but I can't, because I have to get these books done because of December and January plans. So that has gone into later next year. And basically, on the document I did with all the tasks, I've just put, you know, Q1, Q2, 2018 or 2017 before Christmas. For example, my autoresponders on the Creative Pen and JF Pen, I really need to go through and update all of those and redo videos and blah, blah, blah. But that can all wait, because these are the things that need doing before Christmas. The next thing is, what can you outsource? So I realise that for many people, outsourcing, you know, might be difficult because of money, but this is something to think about if you're at the point where you have more money than time, or you want to make better use of your time, and or they are technically beyond what you can do yourself. So one good example is BookFunnel's new delivery mechanism using Sells. So I've been using Sells since 2014, 2013. So I've been doing direct sales for years, but now BookFunnel has this new delivery mechanism. So I need to do some technical integration. And because I have like 20 odd books, 26 or whatever, there's, you know, it's a fair chunk of work. Now, I could do it myself because I'm technical enough, but I'd rather pay someone else. So that's gone into Asana, and Kate will do that because she is pretty technical. You know, and in the meantime, I have the podcast, for example. I have Dan, who does the audio. Wonderful Dan. I have wonderful Jonathan, who does the videos, and wonderful Alexandra, who does I then have SpeechPad, who do the transcription. Then I have the wonderful Alexandra, who does all the formatting and also runs a lot of the Creative Pen these days, to be honest. So I am very grateful to be able to do outsourcing. And it's funny, if you go back and listen to the podcast I did with Chris Ducker in 2015, so over 2 years ago now, with Chris Ducker on outsourcing, you will hear me say that I find it very difficult to outsource and I just don't think it's necessary. And you will hear all my arguments why I'm not going to outsource. And since then, I've got a lot better. I have got much more into it, and I've been increasing the tasks, and yeah. So when people ask me, how do I get everything done and when I sleep, I actually sleep a lot. I love sleep. And in The Healthy Writer, we do have a section on sleep because it's so important. And much of what I do now has other people involved and also automated tools, you know, like Buffer App, Meet Edgar, Zapier, lots of tools that automate things so I don't have to do them. And then finally, sort out your writing and author business schedule. So it was interesting because both Chris Rush and I write fiction in the same way, in that we can't organize which book we're writing in advance. So when we try and plan like 2018, there might be projects that we've got on the list, like loads and loads of projects we want to do, but it will be, we are quite unstructured in what comes up as the next project. We're just like, okay, that is the next project. That has to be the next project. So we are quite unstructured in that kind of creative flow way, but we are both very structured in the organization of a schedule that enables creativity as well as physical health and business plus marketing tasks. So both of us do run with a schedule, and you know, I have JF pen time in my schedule on Google Calendar. I have, at the moment, I've got healthy writer time. I've got sweet romance time coming up in 2 weeks. I have meetings and time off months in advance. I've also booked time out for 2018, which is really important for me because I would pretty much schedule a lot otherwise. So I'm trying to be more careful and more holistic in my scheduling. And I shared a quote at the conference, which I think is good. Be regular and orderly in your life, that you may be violent and original in your work. And that's a quote by Gustave Flaubert, who wrote Madame Bovary. So great book. So the next section is about language and worldview differences. Now, of course, on one level, Americans and British people and all different countries, people from different countries in the world are similar in many ways. And with it, of course, within categorizations, there are many subdivisions. The word American, obviously, with politics these days, doesn't necessarily mean much. The same in Britain with Brexit. So there are different worldviews, whatever country you come from. But what I also kind of discovered is the different worldviews between authors, depending on whether you come from the traditional publishing model or you chose indie first, as I did, with the, you know, application also of demographic differences. For example, you know, often Americans will think America first and US dollars first, without necessarily thinking about the wider world. Whereas, you know, Britain, I certainly count myself as a European. And, you know, because I've lived all over the world and do business all over the world, I often think globally. So these are the things that may affect your worldview. And I want you to start thinking about this. What is your worldview and how is that shaping the way you are doing your author business? Because this was really obvious. I wrote a post this week on the how we read differently. And I've mentioned that before, and have a look on the blog. I'll link to it in the show notes, that very much how we read shapes how we choose to publish. But also, you know, I don't come from traditional publishing. You know, although I've always been a reader, I certainly didn't really think about who published books. I've just read books, you know, I've always read books. And I only thought about publishing after I'd already written my first nonfiction book. I literally did not even consider what publishing was until I'd written this nonfiction book, which later became Career Change. And I then went, oh, so what happens now? And I looked at the Australian publishing industry. I think I sent one email and to an agent who then said, you know, the usual, not interested. And I went, but, you know, I was already thinking, well, why would I do that? You know, because I was a contractor at the time, so I was running my own business as a consultant, I already thought about running my own business as an author. So it was something I thought from the beginning, and that has affected a lot of my worldview. And what I realized in the week is that my understanding of language and terminology is quite different to someone who's come from traditional publishing. And it's different again to people who don't understand business. And this was something I think I'd taken for granted. So I apologize if over the years I say things and you didn't understand what they meant. Or, you know, I've used language assuming you understand. But, you know, maybe that's just common in any industry. But I think what's interesting is even within being an indie author, different people have different terms. So, for example, Chris Rush pointed out that a print box set is actually called an omnibus. And to be fair, I actually never heard of that. You know, there's something vague in my mind that goes, yeah, I know the word omnibus, but I did not associate that at all with three books printed in one book. So, you know, I have, you know, I have an ebook box set of, say, my Arcane One, which is the first three books in my Arcane series are in one ebook file that you can download. And I call that an ebook box set. And a lot of other people call it an ebook box set. So I naturally then I did an audiobook edition, which is called an audiobook box set. And so I thought, oh, I'll do a print edition that is attached on Amazon to that same product. So you can see there's an ebook, there's a print, there's an audiobook. So surely that is a print box set. And Chris was like, no, that's an omnibus. If you call it a box set, people think it's in a box. And I was like, well, no, that's not true, because I don't think that's in a box. And then there was a big discussion on what is a box set, what is a bundle, what is an omnibus. So for example, an ebook omnibus doesn't seem to exist, but an ebook bundle, which is ebooks by multiple authors, does exist. And that might be through Story Bundle or Bundle Rabbit, or even a box set that you do with multiple authors on Amazon, which could be a box set or a bundle. So it was hilarious, because in discussing this, you kind of realize that we are just doing stuff. So I just did this print file. I was like, yeah, why can't that be print? And actually, it's awesome, because it's the size of a George R. R. Martin book. And I've actually done this for, I've got four lots of trilogies in boxes. I suppose I have four omnibuses. And they're awesome. I love them. I love having them in my house, like it's on my vanity shelf. But it's funny, because I just did it and then I called it something. I called it something wrong or not, because who cares? But Chris's point was, well, people won't know what it is. So I might add omnibus on the text, you know, just in case. But it's a bit like the term indie publishing, because that used to mean an independent publishing company, of which there are lots, you know, and these are companies with employees who publish, you know, books, and they're quite, some of them are quite famous. But now, you know, to me, an indie publisher is kind of the same as an indie author. I'm an indie publisher. I have an imprint. I'm independent. I'm not owned by anyone. Therefore, I'm an indie author and I'm an indie publisher. But my friend Orna Ross at the Alliance of Independent Authors also comes from sort of 20 years, 30 years in the industry. And she uses the term author-publisher, which I just don't like at all. And I'm like, why can't we just use a different term? And we disagree over things. And it was funny, because I suddenly realized in Oregon that the reason some of these things are different is because we come from different worldviews. And in fact, Orna, I asked Orna about this. We do a monthly advanced salon for the Alliance of Independent Authors podcast, which you should check out. And we were talking about this week, and she said, oh, but the Alliance has just done a glossary with all the definitions. And I said at the end, but will I agree with it? And she was like, oh, good point, because a glossary of indie terms doesn't necessarily mean the same thing to different people. So even the term right to market is very interesting at the moment, because, you know, Chris Fox has a book about it, but he didn't coin the term. Right to market is very much something that many writers have done. And James Scott Bell, the wonderful James Scott Bell, has been on the show a couple of times before, and I'll definitely have to get him back next year. Jim has just put out a book on pulp writing, being a pulp writer, who, and all of those writers wrote to market. They were like, quick, you know, I can, this fad is happening, write this book, and there it is. But for other people, writing to market is, you know, looking at what they love and then fitting what they love into things. Or, for example, I guess I write to market for this audience, for my nonfiction, but I certainly don't for my fiction. But the understanding of the various things we talk about, especially if you come from traditional publishing, can be very confusing. So I just wanted to bring that up and say, let's be gentle with each other and also be aware of our own worldviews when we're using different vocabulary. And also, again, I just wanted to mention my own business background and vocabulary, because some of the language I take for granted is not understood by many authors who have come from different jobs, or who are still in different jobs, or, you know, might have been a stay-at-home mom, and then, you know, the kids have left home and you have a romance empire, which I know is not reasonably uncommon these days for, you know, ladies to suddenly find themselves with like a publishing empire and not necessarily have any business, you know, nous, I guess. So this is interesting also, and I see this in there in the short-term spike sales rush, which so many people go into, because that is not a long-term business model. It's a short-term spike sale moment in what hopefully is a long lifetime. So just a couple of things. I use the word scalable a lot. As I mentioned before, a book is a scalable intellectual property asset that you create once and can be turned into multiple streams of income, sold to millions of people, turned into all kinds of subsidiary products like games, film, TV, translations, etc. You create it once, sell it forever, which is awesome. And 70 years passed when the author dies. And in fact, you know, we've been doing some stuff around wills and looking at trusts and valuation of IP and, you know, really thinking, I'm starting to think now about what I want to put in place for the future, because it's much easier to set these things up earlier than try and sort them out later. You know, touch wood, I'll be living for a long time. I hope to think that I'm definitely not middle-aged yet. So at 42, I'm not middle-aged. Give me another 20 years and then I might be middle-aged. But I definitely, you know, I'm planning this to be a long-term business that goes on well past my death. So, that's why scalable is important. It needs to go beyond you. So scalability is a fundamental principle if you want to build a long-term business as an author. Creating and licensing IP rights is based on valuing your assets over the long term. And most authors give them away for practically no money and a pat on the head by a traditional publisher. I mean, it's incredible how many stories I hear of authors licensing, you know, all their rights for the term of copyright for like $5,000. And yes, there are friends of mine who are very money savvy and business savvy and are doing very, very well. But there are plenty more who are not and who are basically giving away their IP without any, you know, valuation for the long term. Another fundamental of business is the difference between revenue and profit. So, you know, and this was quite, you know, this is so interesting because it perhaps you only really understand this when you are running a business where all your income is coming from books. Because if you're funding your book life through other things, so you know you've got a day job and this is a hobby, then fair enough, you don't really need to worry about it. But basically, if everything is dependent on your book sales and your writing, then you need to consider revenue versus profit. So there are many voices in the indie sphere talking about how many books they sold. So for example, I sold 10,000 books last month. Or how much revenue or income they made. For example, I made $10,000 from my books last month. But the key point for a sustainable business is profit, which is revenue minus expenses, and then cash flow, because you can only take cash flow from profit, or at least you should. And this is also after taxes. And again, this is something that many creatives get into trouble with. So profit, you know, obviously you can do profit before tax, but the money you should be taking is after you've taken some money out for the tax implications of things, or at least put some money in an accrual account or a place where you put money in advance of paying that tax for later. So that profit is very important. Profit margin is very important. So, and, you know, many people don't put their time in that as well. So if you're spending 8 hours, how much have you valued in there for paying yourself? So if somebody made $10,000 in revenue from book sales last month, but their expenses were $9,000, paying ads, paying freelancers, paying whatever, then they only made $1,000 profit. And then if you factor in their time, so say they spent 40 hours a week doing that, then, you know, $1,000 for a month's full-time work, is that a good return? That's very different to, you know, $10,000 for a month's work, which many people would be happy with. So this is the thing. It turns out that many indie authors or authors in general are not doing their accounts every month or structuring their business for tax efficiency, investing cash for future dips, or paying themselves a salary or superannuation or pension. Now, these words may or may not be exciting for you. Amusingly, I find these very exciting. I hope you're one of those people, or one of those people who wants it to be exciting, or at least interesting. This, to me, business is one of the most creative things you can do. You can create, like, this is what we do. We think of an idea and we create it in the world. We make it happen. We turn it into a book, but then that book can turn it into loads of other things. So, you know, today we were talking about some of this legal stuff and I was thinking about, well, you know, I could potentially have a family trust for my IP that pays my siblings, my nieces, my nephews, my heirs and successors, my old university, whatever, money for the rest of their lives. How many years could my IP pay for my family? And that's so incredible to think. So anyway, many exciting things to consider. If you're missing out on some of these basic business definitions, check out Business for Authors, How to Be an Author Entrepreneur, and available in ebook, print and audiobook, which I narrated. It is the one audiobook I narrated. So you can check that out. And that's at thecreativepen.com/businessbook in ebook, print and audiobook. And yeah, I'm going to be doing some more lecture style mini courses. I'm calling, you know, Dean Wesley Smith has lectures and I'm going to be doing more of those, you know, short things that will help you consider some of this in more detail. And it is fascinating to me how many authors, I mean, maybe it's just because people don't think they will ever do well from this. But the thing is, it's interesting, even if you don't do well, it's possible that other people could do well for you. So say you have children who are good at business, it may be that if, you know, you die and they inherit your IP, they can turn that into something exciting. So these are definitely things for you to think about. All right. And finally, just a little section on seeing the future in San Francisco and Oregon. So this isn't strictly about publishing and I really love England. I'm loving being back in Bath. It's a great place. But I was impressed by the way that San Francisco and Oregon are ahead in a number of ways. So here's a few things I noticed that we're only starting to see in the UK and did seem like sort of things that are coming. So first of all, in San Francisco, on demand and super easy Uber access. Now, Americans might think this is normal, but no. What's happened recently in London is Uber has actually either had their license revoked, and this is part of the kind of backlash against tech companies and unionized things going on and blah, blah, blah. But all the drivers I spoke to, and I did a lot of Ubering around San Francisco. It was so awesome. I could literally open the app and have an Uber within minutes. All the drivers, who were a lot of millennials, to be honest, lots of younger people just doing their thing. And all of them were happy because they could work when they wanted and, you know, just seemed happy. Whether they'll be happy when Uber puts all the self-driving cars in. But, you know, they're making the most of it now. It was also 50% cheaper than a normal cab. So as a customer focused company, that is really interesting. And it's also brilliant internationally because I was able to pay with the app and my business card without dealing with all the international receipts and stuff. And to have my rating carried over internationally was brilliant. So obviously Uber has some challenges around their company structure and some of their stuff, but you know, it is a customer focused company and the way they work absolutely is the future. I can't see how the license ban will last in London. And, you know, within three, it was interesting. I got picked up from the airport by a driver and he reckoned within 3 to 5 years, his job would be replaced, that the cars will be self-driving. So very interesting. Second thing I noticed was USB charging points. Again, this is an international traveler thing, right? But this is brilliant because I have like a travel box because I travel a lot of places. I have a travel box and depending on where I'm flying to, I pull out whichever adapter is necessary for that country. So you need different adapters for America, for Europe, for Australia, New Zealand, and you need a different adapter, whether it's an iPhone or your Mac or whatever. So you need different things. And but what was so awesome is that there were USB charge points everywhere in San Francisco. And this should be common for international travelers. It just seems ridiculous that it's not. So that was interesting. Also, a lot of WeWork and other co-working spaces, as well as lots of people on laptops and cafes, which again, the continued rise of entrepreneurs and, you know, working remotely, whatever. The other thing I noticed was artisan everything. I mean, seriously, in San Francisco, it's all like artisan this and artisan cheesemaker and some, you know, this, everything's small batch made locally. The sourdough bread really is something special. I hung out quite a lot at the ferry building in the Embarcadero, which was lovely. And I also noticed a lot of independent coffee houses, bookstores. For example, there doesn't seem to be a Barnes & Noble in downtown San Francisco, but there are multiple independent bookstores. That was really interesting to me. Also, the legalization of cannabis. So weed was everywhere in Oregon, although it was, well, when I say weed was everywhere in Oregon, I was only in a tiny bit of Oregon. But we drove, when we all drove back to the airport, we passed, you know, a lot of it. Although it was banned from our workshop. So the Coast Workshop, no weed. But it was just very noticeable on the drive back to the airport. And at the moment, the UK is missing out on this growing new economy. So I do expect some kind of legalization in the next few years. It seems the way to go for especially medical marijuana. Oregon also has the Death with Dignity Act, which allows terminally ill Oregonians to end their lives through voluntary self-administration of lethal medications expressly prescribed by a physician for that purpose. California, Colorado, Vermont, and Washington also have that law. This is something I am pretty passionate about, and I support a charity called Dignity in Dying, which I hope will pass a similar law in the UK. This is something that Sir Terry Pratchett wanted, the fantasy author, when he was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's. This is part of what he was trying to achieve. He passed away before the law was necessary. But anyway, bring on the millennial overlords. I hope that they will sort out these laws, basically. And also much more of a focus on sustainability. It was really interesting, certainly a lot more vegetarian, vegan, gluten-free, meat-free, and I suppose that's vegetarian, vegan. But what was interesting is a lot of articles about lab-grown meat, in vitro meat, meat replacements, articles and options. And also everything was recyclable, focused on sustainability, and also no visible obesity in San Francisco that I could see, unlike a lot of US cities I visited over the years. And yeah, it was a very interesting place. And I was like, wow, this is interesting. These are some things that I noticed that, I see as good things to aim for. So that is, I also did, if you look at my Instagram account, instagram.com/JFPenAuthor, you'll see all the photos of my time in San Francisco and Oregon. I did post a few amusing photos on Twitter as well of the weird food that Americans have, including beer cheese soup, which I thought was an interesting thing to have, and lots of medication. So there are both good things and difficult things with America, as we all know. There are difficult things everywhere. But that is my mega roundup of what I've been thinking about over the last few weeks. And it was really great to have some time on the Oregon coast to consider the bigger picture and, you know, what I'm thinking about for my business and for where we are in the state of indie. It feels like we are 10 years in, like the 10 years of the Kindle feels like 10 years in. And that means do we go to high school? I don't think we even go to high school yet. But we're not toddlers anymore. You know, a few years ago, I would talk to people and I'd be like, yeah, we're only toddling. We're in the toddler years. We're just trying stuff and breaking things. And now we're moving up. So it's exciting to think where we might be in the next 10 to 20 years when we move into more mature years and what possibilities we will have. And I want to kind of get you excited about what is coming and what this means for all of us as a movement, and also for us individually as authors, creatives, and hopefully entrepreneurs. I do hope I'm encouraging more of you to think entrepreneurially about business and positively. And I hope this has given you some ideas as well. So thanks to Dean Wesley Smith, Christine Catherine Rush, and also Matt Buckman, who's coming on the show soon, for providing the time and space for a business focus in on the Oregon coast. They have announced that workshop for next year. I won't be going next year, but hopefully in another year. So you can go to deanwesleysmith.com if you're interested in that. And to all the wonderful attendees who came, and some of you who attended might be listening and going, I don't know where she got that stuff from because we didn't cover that at all, then no worries. It was just my thinking while I was away. I imagine everyone will have very different notes because we're all at different points in the journey. So, you know, and what's so awesome is we can keep learning. So I love learning. Right. So these are some of the thoughts shaping my business plan for 2018. I will talk more about the detail of that as we come to the end of the year. And I look forward to continue sharing the author entrepreneur journey alongside you. And if you have any thoughts or questions, please leave them in the comments of the blog post that this will be attached to. That's on the you can find the show notes and the blog post with all the notes on thecreativepen.com/podcasts. And also you could tweet me at thecreativepen with a double M. So I hope you enjoyed the session today. It was a little different to usual, and I'm actually thinking of doing more of these, although in a shorter format. I know this was it was a little longer than I expected, to be honest. Maybe even doing midweek mini-sodes or in-betweenisodes, as Tim Ferriss calls them on his podcast. So do let me know in the comments of the show notes on the blog, or tweet me at The Creative Pen, or email me joanna@thecreativepen.com to let me know what you think. I'll be looking to do some mini lecture style courses as well in the next few months in order to try and spread the education that indie authors need to the further market, I suppose. You can also check out Business for Authors in ebook, print or audio formats. And next week I'll be talking to Emmanuel Taff about publishing in 2027 as we try to see into the future and discuss blockchain, cryptocurrencies, as well as AI, augmented reality, virtual reality, language translation implications, and the future of jobs, which is all very exciting. So happy writing week, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.